Okay, so tonight's shiur is actually the Yahrzeit shiur for my grandmother. Her Yahrzeit is on Shabbos this year. It's her fourth Yahrzeit, so we learn every week as a Le'iloi Nishmasah, but specifically this week. So I actually struggled this week finding a topic. I don't know why it was so hard, but I just... I don't know, this morning I still didn't have anything. I thought I had something. I didn't like it. I was working on it, you know, here and there throughout the day. And then I came home and I was like, nah, I'm not loving that topic. So went back to something I'd seen earlier. So I want to discuss the First World War. It's the first real war that we know about in the in Tanakh. And it's a pretty... fascinating one, but I have to be honest that until I read this article by Rabbi Grummet this week, it really never like hit me the scope of this war. I kind of always viewed it as like it was like a local war. We have like the five kings that are in central Israel or southern Israel down by Stone and that whole area, and like that's who we're talking about. And yet, if you read the Pesukim carefully, we see that there's actually a lot more going on. So I want to kind of try to figure that out a little bit. The map, I apologize, ancient map of the Near East is not a very good, well, it's actually an excellent map, but because I shrunk it down to fit on this page, I think a lot of it is missed. But if you do look carefully, you can see some of the important points along the way. So let's start from the beginning. Ah, that's excellent. Okay. So, all right, that's a lot easier to see. So actually, you know what? Because David did that, and I really appreciate that, let's take a look at that map for just a moment. So yeah, that's perfect. David, if you leave it just like that, yeah, amazing. Okay, so if you take a look at the map, this is the ancient civilization. And at the time, pre the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, this map actually is going to be perfect in trying to help us understand what the world looked like. The world was built basically at this point in time, not built, but the world existed around the major rivers. So you had the Euphrates and the Tigris River up north, which would be Mesopotamia, right? So that's a good one, right? So we all know that. Right, that like should bring us back to like elementary school social studies. So we have that. That's you know area number one. Now the other one, obviously, the other major civilization at the time was where? Also around a big prominent river. Egypt. Yeah, Egypt. Right. So all the way on the other side, right, down on the other side, we have Egypt. So that's our second major civilization. The third civilization, which was also built around a river, would be in the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan, and it would be around the Jordan River. And of course, from what we know from the Chumash, the major area that existed there, right, the part that you would want to choose to live in was down in Sodom and Gomorrah. Nobody would want to choose to live in the area that Abraham lived in. So that's the area that we're going to deal with tonight. And I think what's important to try to figure out is as we get to each of the psukim, to try to identify who is where. And I think that gives us a better perspective on the scope of this war. So Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi bimei Rafel Melech Shinar. So it's in the times of Amraphel, the king of Shinar, Aryoch, the king of Elasar, Kedar Laomer, who is the king of Elam, Tidal Melech Goyim, Tidal, the king of Goyim, Asumil Chamad, Bera Melech Sedom, Bet Birsha Melech Amora, Shinav Melech Adma, Vishem Ever Melech Tsoyim, U Melech Bela Hitzawar. So they had a battle. They went to war with Bera the king of Stone, Birsha the king of Amora, Shinav the king of Adma, Shem Aver the king of Tzvayim, and the king of Umelech Bela Hitzawar. Fine. So kol eila chavru el emek hasidim hu yam hamelach. Now the Torah is giving us some information. Where did the battle take place? So they all got together where? In emek hasidim, in the valley of Sidim. Now you won't find emek hasidim on the map at all. The reason why you won't find emek hasidim on the map is because I don't think that's a place that we really know. But the pasuk is very helpful because it tells us what is that? Hu yam hamelach. That is the... Right? Yam HaMelach. Now, we know where Yam HaMelach is. That's the Dead Sea. Okay? So, that's where we are. So, but where did the other kings come from? Amraphel, the king of Shinar. Aryoch Melech Elasar. Now, of those places, one of them we actually do know. Right? We don't. I at least, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know Elasar. I don't know Elam. I don't know Goyim. But what place do we know? We know Shinar, right? We know Shinar because if you look back to last week's Parsha, right? So what is it? If you look in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk, probably about Aleph, Vayikol Aretz Safa Acharu Dvarim Achadim, right? Everybody is of one voice. Vahim Vinasam Mikedem Aymitzu Ubikabi Eretz Shinar Vayeshu Sham. They find a valley in the land of Shinar, and that's where they live, right? So Shinar is all the way up north. So that's somewhere on the... Oh, we lost the screen. That's okay. That would be either, right? That would be somewhere between Haran and... Oh, cool. Okay. That would be somewhere between Haran and Nineveh, right? So if you're looking at the map, that's above the words Mesopotamia. So that's where you're talking about. Somewhere in that area is the area that we're talking about. So they came from up there, and where did they go? So they went and they attacked in the land of Canaan. They attacked by storm. So here's a question. What was their goal when they did this? Right? These four powerful kings, when they came and they attacked, what were they trying to do? So they're trying to take over the land. So if they're trying to take over the land, what would be their goal in taking over the land?
Well, we know from Lot that it was plush meadows and grass. It's a fertile land.
Good. So they're clearly interested in something in this fertile land. What would they be interested in?
Trade route with Egypt.
So, okay. So they want to control the trade route to Egypt. Okay, so I won't say definitively no. Stone is on the eastern bank of Israel. The trade route is more on the western bank of Israel. But then again, it's all of a couple of miles wide, so not such a big deal. Okay, but in all likelihood, they were looking for what? They were looking for money, meaning they didn't want to conquer the land. They wanted to own. They wanted to have the people of the land be subservient to them, in order so that they can collect taxes, and this state could be a tribute to them. So 12 shana avdu kedar laomer u'shlosha asrei shana maradu. 12 years they worked for kedar laomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. Now, if kedar laomer really was occupying the land, and was really living in the land, the next couple psukim wouldn't make sense. So it would seem as though what happened was they controlled the land from a distance, and they put together a local government who collected taxes, and there was a governor and tax collectors, and what they did was they said, you pay taxes to us, we'll leave you alone. And for 12 years, that's exactly what happened. And in the 13th year, they rebel. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to look at the next couple psukim carefully and let's try to figure out a couple things. First off, what's extra? And second of all, where is this going? Like, where are these people? When the four kings come to attack the five kings, what does their route look like? So pasuk hey. And in the 14th year, Kedar LaOmer came and the kings that were with him. Vayakut Rifaim Bashtoro Kanat Karnayim. So they defeat the Rifaim in a place called Ashtoro Kanayim. If you see it on the map, if any of these places are there, please let me know. And then after that, Vayetazuzim Bahar, Baham, and the Zuzim in a place called Baham, Vetaimim Bishaveh Kiryatayim. And the Aimim are in the place called Shaveh Kiryatayim. Vetachori Baharam Seir, and they defeat the Chori, which is, by the way, if you look at Esav's lineage, so Chori is one of the people, in the mountains of Seir, Ad El Paran, until the desert of Paran. Right, now these are names already that we're familiar with. Where are we familiar with these names? Paran, Har Seir. So Moshe, maybe the Jews, right? When they go through the desert, where do they go?
Well, they go around Seir, and they went, yeah.
Yeah, they go, before that, they go to Midbar Paran. Right. So now, where do they go there? Vayashuvu vayachvau el ein mishpat hi Kadesh. They then come to a place called Kadesh. It's not on the map, but okay. And then what happens after that? And they destroy the entire valley, the entire field of Amalek, and even the Emori that's in Chatzetzon Tamar. Now, if you take a look at Rashi below, Rashi bechatzetzon Tamar who Ein Gedi, they go and they wipe out the people in Ein Gedi. Now there should be a couple big questions on these psukim. Will anybody have any questions to raise before we continue?
Well, the Amalek wasn't one of the kings. Amori wasn't one of the kings. Why are they warring with them?
Good. So that's an excellent question. Where did all these people come from, right? The four kings had a problem with the five kings. So why is it that all of a sudden we're told about the Rifaim and the Zuzim and the Chori and the Amori and the Amaleki? Yeah, where did these people come from? What's their connection to the story and to the military campaign that's going on? Now, a technical question, but I think it's a good one anyway, is Stei HaAmaleki. The field of Amalek. What would be the problem with that?
Well, if you go traditionally, Amalek wasn't born yet.
Yeah, Amalek is whose kid?
Esau.
Esau's kid, right? Esau wasn't born yet because we're still at like Avraham before he has his kids. So Rashi points out and says, "Adayin lo nolad Amalek v'nikral shem atid." We're giving places, the names of the places that we're being told here are places that we know from the future. Meaning the Torah is using names that we would be more familiar with, even though some of them don't exist yet. But I think Henry's question is the question that we really have to figure out. Why are all these people being involved in the battle when they don't seem to have anything to do with it? So, that's a really good question. I think in general, you could ask the question, why do we need all this information? Who cares what they did? Don't we just want to get to Pasuk Chet, which is Vayetze Melech Sto Melech Hamura Melech Adma Melech Tzvayu Melech Bela Hitzawar Vayerchuta Melech Hamab Emek Hasitim. That what happens is that they, the Chevra of the five kings, they get together in Emek Hasidim, and they're like, all right, bring it on, let's fight. It's the four kings against the five kings. The Emek Asadim Bero Pero Chemar. Now, Emek Asidim is full of tar, pits of tar. Who cares about that, right? What is that ad tar story?
So
So the king of Sodom and Amorah, they run there and they fall into these pits. And everybody else went up to the mountains. They take everything that belongs to Sodom and Amorah, all their food, and they go. And they take Lot and all of his stuff, and he is, of course, we know, the nephew of Avram, and he was in Sodom. Why do we need all this? So this pasuk should help us. Right? What does pasuk Yud Bet tell us? What is the reason that we need all this information?
The future.
The future.
They're plundering.
They're plundering.
It leads us to Lot.
Say again?
It leads us to Lot.
Yeah, Lot is the key here because when Lot enters into the battle, what does that do for us?
It draws in Avram.
Right, it draws Avram into the story. Avraham has no real reason to be involved in this world war, and yet Avram's going to become very much involved, right? Why? He becomes involved because he is vested in Lot's safety. Now, I didn't write that. I didn't bring down the psukim on the Makoros, but what does Avram do? Avram attacks him. How many men does he take to battle with him? Yeah, 318. Which, by the way, in Gematria is Eliezer. So maybe he didn't even bring 318 people with him. Maybe he only brought Eliezer with him. The 318 men, right, go with Avraham and they battle. They attack the four kings. They rout the four kings. And if you take a look at the map, so David, could you just zoom in a little bit on Israel, please? Okay, perfect. So, yeah, there we go. So you can see the Dead Sea just above Petra. So they started by the Dead Sea, and what happens is, right, they head up north, right, and the Avram defeats them or gives up chase when he reaches where? Damascus. When he reaches Damascus. So that's quite a distance. He goes the entire length of Israel and he stops there. How does Avram win? Of course, we're going to say that Avram wins by miracle. But it makes sense that he's chasing them to Damascus because where are they running? Right, they're going home. Where's home? Home is up north. And they're specifically going to go the way they're going because they're going to follow the highway, which is the quickest way back up to Haran and that whole area. But how did they come down? And that's I think, kind of like a pretty important piece. How did they get there in the first place? Right, let's take a look. Now, if you take a look at... Sorry. If you take a look at the next page, there's a much better map to work with. Certainly, David will appreciate the second map because it's a lot less work for him to do.
Let's take. So it said before that they did a battle on Ein Gedi, which is right between Yam HaMelech and Damascus, or close to Yam HaMelech. They're already there. They already killed somebody in Ein Gedi.
Right. So, if you take a look at the map, so if you could zoom out just a little bit more, so we could see the top of the map, right? They start up in Rifaim Ashterot Karnayim. That's like north. That's like in the general area of Damascus. And then they're coming down, and where do they go? In Ham, right? So Ham is a little bit south of there. And then from there they go to they go and fight in Shaveh Kiryatayim. That's over there. And then they take a circuitous route through Chori to the mountains of Seir, right? Which I guess would be either Saudi Arabia or Jordan, right? And then they come down the south, and then they head back up north to Kadesh. And then Kadesh, of course, we know that's where Moshe Rabbeinu sends the spies. And then from there, they go to Sde HaAmaleki, and then Chatzitzon Tamar, which is Ein Gedi. Now, what would
Amalek
be...
Amalek is on the wrong side of the river, if that's the case. If you're now saying Amalek is between Kadesh and Ein Gedi, they're on the wrong side.
Who's on the wrong side?
Amalek.
Why? Amalek is southern Israel, like below Beersheba, but Amalek is on the Israel side of the Jordan. But what's wrong with this picture? Meaning, this is their route. What's wrong with their route?
Well, they passed by the king of Sodom already, but they didn't do battle with him yet, and they're right in his backyard.
Right. I mean, there is only one thing that's blocking his backyard, and that's of course like the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. But if you're the way Avram chases them is clearly the quickest route back to their homeland, which is straight up north to Damascus. Why is it that when they come down, they opt to go through the desert area of Rephaim, Ashtar Karnaim, Ham, Shavei Kiryatayim? So they're like, it's like satellite cities. The five cities are it's the region called Stone, which is also the region called Stone and Amora. And next to Sodom and Amora is Adma Utsoyim and Tsoar, right? Which are the less known of the five towns that exist there, right? But they're all north of Ein Gedi. So it seems to me, like, why would you want to take that long route going through the other side, which, by the way, that land means you're going through more of the desert. It's more difficult to travel. We don't necessarily have the same kind of highway and infrastructure you would have on the other side of the river. So why do they do that? Okay, so that's my question. That's one question, is why do they do that? And the other question is, what do I need all these details? What do they do? So Rashi helps us a little bit. Rashi says on Be'arot. It's not in the sources, but it should be a pretty easy Rashi to quickly pull up in Sefaria or in a Chumash. Okay. So here we go. Perek Yudalid. Where are we? Bero Chemar. What was that? Pasuk Yud. Right. So Rashi points out Bero Chemar. Beirot Harbe Hayusham. There were a lot of pits there. Shnot Limisham Adama Letichel Binyan. And they used that to get the to make cement for their building. Umidrash Agada. The Medrash says that actually what happened was the cement surrounded them and the king of Sodom fell in it, and the miracle is shiyatza misham, that he got out of there. Why is that a big deal? There were those that felt that it was impossible that Avram had been saved from the furnace. When they came out and survived, so all of a sudden, Limafreya, everybody who said, whoa, it must be that Avram also was saved. So what's fascinating is, who would be the people that didn't believe that Avraham was saved from Ur Kasdim? It's less likely that those were the people in Israel, more likely that it was the people where? Back in the area of the four kings, right? So Avraham and Avraham was getting validation by who? The people from where he left, right? His homeland people were like, wait a second, you really did actually do that. That's a pretty big deal. But as Rashi points out, this is all Limafreya. So now let's take a look at the other source, because we're still stuck with a question. Why didn't he take this circuitous route? What was the purpose of that? But I think when we look at Dvarim Bet, I think we're going to find ourselves the answer. So Dvarim Bet. Vanefen vanisa midbar derech yamsuf kasher divrei Hashem ilai vanasav el har seir yamim rabim. The Jewish people left Kadesh. It's been a lot of years. And what do? So they spend a lot of time by Har Seir. And then they leave. Pasuk Bet. Vayomer Hashem Elai Lemor. God says to Moshe, saying, Rav lechem sovet ahar ezeh, pnu lechem tzafona. I want you to do what? I want you to leave and head up north. Now, if they're in, if you look, you don't have to, if you have the sources, that's great. David does not have to move and lose it and do any highlighting or whatever. But if you take a look at the map, right, that we looked at before, if they're in Kadesh and they're going north, how should they go north? The quickest way north into the land of Israel would be through southern Israel, which we would call in those days the area called Amalek. But that's actually not what they do. They head north, but it's really more like first they go east and then they head up north. But the Am Tzavli Mor Atem Ovrim B'Gvul Acheichem Menei Sav Yoshim B'Seir V'Yirum Mikem Nishnar Atem Ha'od. So they do go up, and they're told that they have to be careful by the Bnei Esav, right? They can't attack. Al titkaru b'am ki lo ten lachem me'artam ad midrach kaf regel ki yushal Esav natati har seir. You have to be careful when you go there, because you're not going to be able to even take one footstep of that land without permission. Why? Or not even without permission, period. Why? Because that is the land of Esav. And food and water you're going to pay for if you want to eat it, if you want to drink it. That's what you have to do. Right, and God has blessed you with everything that you need as you've gone through the desert these 40 years. You weren't missing anything. And so what happens? So they pass around Esav, and they go up towards Eilat and Etzion Gaver. They pass through the Moab desert. God says, leave the people of Moab alone as well. Because I'm giving them as that as an inheritance. So we're told about this area of giants, and what was that place called? Rephaim. And then we're told that the Moavim called them the Emim. And the Chori were replaced by the Bnei Esav. Atakumu vivru lachem in Nachal Zared v'navor et Nachal Zared. Go north and go over the Wadi of Zared. What is amazing is that this route that the Jewish people took is actually pretty much the exact opposite. It starts in Kadesh, it goes through Seir, it goes up to Shavei Kiryatayim, and it ends up by the area of Rephaim. So why do we have the same place twice? So this is what I wanna suggest. Rabbi Grumman has an amazing answer. So he says, what was the purpose of this war? So let's think about the Jewish people. The Jewish people originally, like, what was plan A? How are we going to get into the land of Israel?
Get there or conquer it?
How are we going to get there? Meaning, what was going to be the route to get into the land of Israel to conquer it? Well, I'm saying, like, in the times of, like, of the Jewish people leaving Egypt. Right, we were in Sinai, right? We got the Torah at Har Sinai, which you can see there. Not sure if that's exactly where it is, but let's accept that. Where were they headed?
North.
North. How are they going to, right, north? Based on this map, where would we be going? The closest one place we would go is, right, we'd be going in between Gaza and Jerusalem, that general area, right? That's how we were supposed to go into the land of Israel. What went wrong? Right, the Chet HaMeraglim. So then we spend 38 years like going in circles, and when the 38 years are done, where do we go? So we start again. And when we start again, then we go down and around and all around the other way. Now the question is, why did we have to do that? What was the purpose of that? So to answer that question, I think we have to take a look at a pasuk that we know very, very well, unless you get to shul really late, in which case you probably don't know that pasuk so well because you skip it. Why do you skip it? Because it's one of the first things to leave Psukei DeZimra. But assuming you get to shul and can keep up the pace with the Baal Tefillah and you say all Psukei DeZimra, so this is a pasuk that we all know. Of course, I'm having a hard time. Shamu Amir Gazun. Right? The nations heard and trembled, and they were consumed. The people of Plishtim, right? The Philistines were gripped with fear. Asni Falu Alufe Adom. Edom is terrified. Elei Moav Yochazem Rad. The chiefs of Moab were gripped with fear as well. Namogu kol yoshei Kanan, and all the settlers of Canaan, their hearts melted. Had the Jewish people gone in right after Kriyas Yamsuf, right after Matan Torah, Rachav tells us that the people were terrified. But then Amalek attacks us, and that cools us off a little bit. But when we go and send the spies in, and then don't come into the land of Israel, we actually lost some. 38 years later, people weren't like, ooh, the Jews. Ooh, God is going to do us in. It was more like, eh, it is what it is. Right? We're not really afraid. Like, what's coming down the pike is not so scary. So what God said is, I have to take you somewhere and have you do some stuff to scare the living daylights out of people. So this marauding army, this huge group of people, they slowly trek around. They scare Seir, but they don't do anything. They scare Moab, Ammon and Moab, but they don't do anything. And then, of course, they rout Sihon and Og, going all the way up to the Eretz Rephaim. When that happened, what happened in the land of Israel? The land of Israel, once again, the people were quaking. And that's why when they send the spies to Rachav, Rachav was like, oh yeah. There is definite fear on the people's behalf. That was the purpose of this long circuitous route. They wanted to scare the people, the inhabitants of Eretz Canaan. Now, why do you think the people of the four kings take this route? Right. Correct. They have the same goal. But why do they have the same goal? You see, when they're attacking Stom, they don't want to rout the land of Stom. What do they want the people of Stom to do? They want to scare them into submission. Right? We give up. Take us. But not really take us. Just take our land and we'll pay you taxes again. So they slowly, the four armies, slowly move their way southward. And as they stop everywhere along the way, the people just across the river, because as mighty as the Jordan is, it's not that big. They see what's coming, and they're terrified. And they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting. And then the question is, what's going to happen when they finally get to Stone? Kedar LaOmer's hope was that when they got there, the people would surrender right away. And then they would continue to collect tribute and everything would be fine. They did not want to destroy the lush, rich area. Problem is that Stone decided that they were not going to go quietly. They weren't going to go so easily. And that's where we enter in Avram. Avram comes in and he ends up winning the war. How? How does he win the war? So there's three possibilities. One possibility, which I'm not comfortable with, is that Avram didn't really fight the war, and that this is a nice message, and it's not necessarily historically accurate. And you could make that argument. You could make that argument with parts of early Bereshis, and you would probably, you actually not probably, you would definitely, although in some circles you would lose your credibility, but you wouldn't be going against the Torah by doing that. You'd get into a lot of trouble if you started saying things like Matan Torah didn't happen, right? That would make a person an Eino Mamin. But to say that this didn't happen is a possibility, and it's just a nice lesson. But obviously the easiest way of dealing with this is it was a miracle. Avram miraculously routs the armies. Now, you could, Rabbi Grumman says, you could also say that it's Avraham's strategy that wins the war. Of course, with the help of God, but Avram does something that nobody had ever really done before. He fought at night. Right? All the armies said, like, it gets dark, that's it, camp for the night, you wait till tomorrow. Avram attacks them at night and takes advantage of the fact that they are all for tumult because they don't know what's going on. And they keep running, and obviously that's going to create more casualties, and that's going to win. Also, Avram divides his forces. Nobody had ever done that before. So the question, though, is why did Avraham even get involved in this fight in the first place? And that, I think, is where we kind of answer a different question that we could have is, why does Avraham emerge as the this unbelievable figure on the face of history? And that's because Avraham is a person that has a strong moral fiber to him. And Avraham emerges and engages in battle out of loyalty. So, okay, that could be very well the message of this story. What I think is interesting about the story is what we don't see anywhere in the story is Avraham's not getting directions from God. Avram got directions when he left Haran. Avram might have gotten directions in other places. Avram gets directions when he, goes around the land of Israel and does what he has to do. But Avram does not get directions at this point at all. What Avram is beginning to figure out is, how do I act sometimes absent of Hashem's command? And that's kind of how Avram begins to develop like that personality and that independence that is going to define him. But it is interesting how these psukim kind of mirror each other. The story of the Jewish people's exodus from Israel, from Egypt, and this story as well, they're the reverse of each other. But in both ways, they very much have to do with the prominence of the Jewish people. Because yes, the four kings do win the war. And yes, the four kings make a name for themselves. But obviously, in this battle, the person who truly makes a name for himself is Avram.